The only right recourse to spiritual antagonism is spiritual abandonment. Welcome, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Kenneth Wong is our host. He's an author, teacher, and itinerant speaker. Well, yesterday in part two of The Sovereign Hand of God, we learned of the spiritual antagonism between evil guy Haman and good guy Mordecai. But this antagonism wasn't just against Mordecai, but against the entire Hebrew people. A plot had been hatched to exterminate Esther's people. A plot with potential horrific and catastrophic consequences. But the only right recourse to spiritual antagonism is spiritual abandonment. In just a moment, we learn what happens when Ken presents part three of The Sovereign Hand of God.
Hello, everyone. It's good to have you with us as we continue with part three of The Sovereign Hand, a study on the book of Esther in the Old Testament. In the first part, we have dealt with the authorization of Ahasuerus, or King Xerxes, in removing the Queen Vashti because of her disobedience and insubordination. In the second part, we dealt with the accession of Esther to the throne as the queen in the place of Vashti. And for the third part today, we'll deal with the activation of Mordecai. We therefore see the major cast of characters coming onto the scene one by one in the subtitles for the various parts as the drama unfolds. We left off yesterday at the end of chapter 3 of the book of Esther. Let us then resume with reading from verse 14 of chapter 4. A copy of the document was to be issued as law in every province, being published for all people that they should be ready for that day. Verse 15. The couriers went out, hastened by the king's command, and the decree was proclaimed in Shushan the citadel. So the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Shushan was perplexed. It's interesting to realize how the royal couriers were able to dispatch the decree so quickly throughout the length and breadth of the Persian Empire. A previous king, Darius, had established a very efficient system of roads. They totaled some 2,700 kilometers, with over 100 staging posts, with fresh horses standing ready for the king's couriers when they arrived. That was how it was possible for them to traverse the whole length and breadth of the empire in a week, compared to about 3 months that would have been taken by traveling caravans. Once again, taking a macro look at the dark events that happened so quickly in chapter 3, that were provoked by spiritual antagonism, we see Satan's scheming working again, against God's people. Ever since Pharaoh tried to kill all the Hebrew baby boys during Moses' day, we find a similar pattern replicated time and again. As it was then in Moses' day, so it was now through Haman in Esther's day. And by the time of Jesus' day, the same pattern was played out through the wicked Herod. And in our own day and age, we see the same thing manifested through men like Hitler in the Holocaust in more recent times. Just prior to Esther's time, there was already strong spiritual opposition that had been encountered by the returning remnant in their attempt to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. And a part of Satan's scheme is always to frustrate and to thwart God's people from advancing and moving forward. And it's important for saints to recognize this fact of spiritual antagonism and to resist Satan. Others may be perplexed, as we have read in the last verse of chapter 3, the city of Shushan was perplexed. But for those who know and fear the Lord, we are not ignorant of Satan's devices, that we may be taken advantage of, as Paul says in 2 Corinthians 2:11. Now note the strategic position of this Esther episode in relation to the returning remnants to rebuild the temple and the city of Jerusalem. Satan has had a fairly long break of over 70 years during the Babylonian exile, and suddenly the first cohort returned from exile, and soon restoration work was underway. And all of a sudden, quite unexpectedly, one of them had been made queen over this vast empire. we can expect Satan to be roused to action again against God's people when things seem to be going their way again. The point from these previous considerations is this: when and where there is spiritual ascendancy, we can always expect spiritual antagonism. Now on to chapter 4 of Esther, verse 1. When Mordecai learned all that had happened, he tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the midst of the city. He cried out with a loud and bitter cry. He went as far as the front of the king's gate, for no one might enter the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. And in every province where the king's command and decree arrived, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. So Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her, and the queen was deeply distressed. Then she sent garments to clothe Mordecai and take his sackcloth away from him. But he would not accept them. So Esther sent one of her servants to find out from Mordecai about what had happened and why. Mordecai was easily found in the city square in front of the king's gate, where he always was. So he related what had happened and the sum of money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasuries so as to destroy the Jews. He also gave the servant a copy of the written decree for their destruction, so that Esther could read it for herself. And Mordecai relayed this message and command through the servant to Esther, to go to the king to make supplication to him and plead before the king for her people. In the midst of these dark and tragic days, God already had someone strategically placed in the highest position of power to stand for him and for his people. This is what the exilic prophet Ezekiel wrote in Ezekiel chapter 22, verse 30. So I sought for a man among them who would make a wall and stand in the gap before me on behalf of the land, that I should not destroy it, but I found no one. Alas, in Ezekiel's day, while God sought for a man who would stand in the gap before him on behalf of the land that he should not destroy it, he found no one. To stand in the gap means to be God's man or woman, to represent him in the place where he is opposed or withstood, just as Mordecai and Esther found themselves in, with a disastrous decree by Haman to destroy them weighing heavily upon their hearts. We are all called to stand at some time, at some point, in a particular gap, no matter how small it may be. It's like the remnant returnees from exile, rebuilding and defending the wall of Jerusalem during Nehemiah's day. They all had a part to play and a position to defend. Some were more strategic and critical than others, but everyone was necessary. It may just be a small breach or a crack, but if it is left unchecked, it may grow and worsen and lead to big ruin. And we find that God often uses small people to do great things for him. To stand in the gap is to meet spiritual antagonism with spiritual ascendancy. And that's what we find in Esther. But she found herself shut in between a rock and a hard place. It was a very difficult position to be in. While she was used to obeying Mordecai, her guardian, this was something far from straightforward and far more difficult, because it involved approaching the king when you have not been called for. And that is a very risky thing to do. So she sent back word to Mordecai through her servant, saying this in verse 11 of chapter 4. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court to the king who has not been called, he has but one law: put all to death except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter, that he may live. Yet I myself have not been called to go into the king these 30 days. And Mordecai sent back this reply to Esther in verse 13. Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Who knows? Maybe a man's remark, but God knows all things in his infinite wisdom and foreknowledge. The cause or the crisis is not the call. They only reveal the call on a person's life. A person is called long before the cause or the crisis becomes apparent. We heed God's call by being obedient to Him at all times and in all things. And then presently we shall discover that all along He has placed us just where we are most needed. And God found a lowly but godly orphaned girl in the person of Esther among all His people scattered throughout the Persian Empire, one who had the spiritual ascendancy to rise to the occasion when the crisis came. She was destined for the throne in such a critical hour of need. She had been placed there by God for such a time as this, as it says in chapter 4, verse 14. She was God's person for that hour of need. But how will she respond? How should she respond in the hour of need? Reading on from verse 15 of chapter 4. Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, "Go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise. And so I will go to the king, which is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther commanded him. So Esther heeded and obeyed Mordecai's command by giving him another command in turn. She will go into the presence of the king to plead on behalf of all her people, but she was not going to do it alone. She well understood the power of intercession and prayer. She was going to go before God's throne of grace before she made her appearance to appeal before man's throne. Her instructions were very simple. Get everyone to fast and pray for 3 days and nights with me. We are all in this together and we are appealing first to God and not to man. Esther's response was one of spiritual abandonment. And that's the only right recourse to spiritual antagonism. It's spiritual abandonment. That means to cast oneself entirely on God, to forsake and to surrender all trust on man or on self. This vital spirit of abandonment is epitomized by Esther's classic cry in chapter 4, verse 16. If I perish, I perish. It is truly dying to self and laying your whole life in the hands of God. It's spiritual abandonment and resignation to God. It's not helpless or hopeless resignation to circumstances. That kind of negative or passive resignation to circumstances would cripple and paralyze with a sense of futility. If I perish, I perish is not a cry of fatalism or fanaticism. In verse 11, we have read of their very interesting custom of the king extending the golden scepter to someone who appears before him without having been called by the king for his life to be spared. It's really a risk that no one wants to take unless you're desperate. And while it seems to depend very much on the whim and fancy and the mood of the king at that moment, the reality is, as far as Esther is concerned, together with all those who are praying with her, the one in true control of all things and upon whom everything depends is the sovereign God who rules from His throne in heaven. That custom is really a picture of God extending grace and mercy to sinners who are doomed to die otherwise when they come before Him in judgment. And you can say that when Esther appeared before the king, she did not go according to law, because the law did not permit that, but she went by grace through faith. She simply proceeded on the same basis and in the same way as when she first came to be chosen as the queen. By now she had been queen for some 5 years, but she did not take for granted or presume on this experience, but simply trusted God. True abandon always leads to action, not to despair or passivity. Although prayer is not specifically mentioned, it is obviously implied that they were all called to 3 days and nights of fasting with prayer. They devoted themselves to laying hold of God in fervent prayer with fasting, in earnest supplications and intercessions, for God to intervene, to deliver, and to move on their behalf. The 3 days and nights of prayer with fasting was for all the Jews in the capital city of Shushan, they recognized the spiritual nature of the conflict, and they effectively engaged the enemy in spiritual warfare with 3 days of corporate fasting and prayer in preparation for the critical hour when Esther would actually appear before the king to make her appeal. Remember what a great risk that was. If the golden scepter were not extended to her, there would not be even a chance to present that appeal, and they would have lost their woman who was standing in the gap. Fasting implies a laying aside of the normal necessities of life, in order to give oneself without distraction, to seek God and to plead with God in prayer. Fasting is the physical expression of such an attitude of abandonment. If something weighs so heavily upon our hearts, we would not normally even have the appetite for eating and drinking. So this is a call to lay aside even normal sustenance in order to be entirely cast on God for His provision and providence in a pressing situation like this. Having prepared themselves through spiritual abandonment in prayer and fasting, it was now time for spiritual action. And this is what we see in chapter 5 of the book of Esther. Now it happened on the third day that Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace, across from the king's house, while the king sat on his royal throne in the royal house, facing the entrance of the house. Verse 2, so it was when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court that she found favor in his sight, and the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Then Esther went near and touched the top of the scepter. And the king said to her, what do you wish, Queen Esther? What is your request? It shall be given to you up to half the kingdom. Now contrast the previous Queen Vashti's insubordination with Esther's intercession for God's intervention. What a direct opposite to the former Queen Vashti who refused to go when she was summoned by the king. That's what we call brazenness. On the other hand, Esther went with boldness, not brazenness, before the throne, even when she had not been summoned for the past 30 days. She came by faith and she found grace. She dared to come before the throne of the king because she had prayed before the throne of God in preparation for this. She came by faith and hence found favor. Because she didn't come according to the law, she obtained grace. She appeared before the king on the third day after prayer and fasting. And the third day also prefigures the day of resurrection, as Jesus rose again on the third day after he died. It signified victory and triumph over death, sin and Satan, by Jesus on the cross. So when she appeared before the king on the third day, she already had the victory from the throne of grace and of God, before she uttered a single word of appeal before the earthly throne. Let us then heed the exhortation of the writer to the Hebrews. In the New Testament book of Hebrews, chapter 4, verse 16, let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Isn't that what Esther did and what she received? She came boldly to the throne of grace, and she found mercy and grace to help in time of need. This was the first answer to prayer in being granted an audience with the king. And then it was followed by an open favor for any petition that she would be pleased to bring before the king, up to half the kingdom, which is a way of saying, whatever you like, as long as I'm still in charge. So Esther answered in chapter 5, verse 4, if it pleases the king, let the king and Haman come today to the banquet that I have prepared for him. Esther did not present the request immediately or directly, the thing that was weighing so heavily on her heart. It's probably part of Oriental culture and Eastern etiquette not to present a request immediately or directly. But surely the real reason behind it was that she was led by God, after all the preparation in prayer and fasting, to do it this way and to make a simple request for the king and Haman to be invited to a dinner that she would be hosting just for them. The stage is now set for a strange and sudden turn of events. After abandonment to God in prayer and fasting, She was now armed with faith and courage and ready for action. Stay tuned to find out what happened at Esther's banquet for the king and Haman tomorrow. In the meantime, may you be refreshed by God's presence and be reached by His exciting word.
Queen Esther. She went with boldness before the throne even when she was not summoned. She went by faith and she found grace. Thank you, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And I invite you to join us again tomorrow when Kenneth brings us part 4 of The Sovereign Hand of God. Right now, though, we would love to hear from you, and I have several ways through which you can be in contact. You can send us a text message at 9431-3813, or you can write to us at Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road Post Office, Singapore 915-714. You can go to our Facebook page and leave your comments there or share some views with some of the other folks you see. Also, I invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, where you can listen to the program right online. And Times of Refreshing has launched an iPhone app that allows users to directly access the broadcast messages and the podcasts right from their iPhones. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.